Up until now, all of the women that we've heard from have pretty much followed a path directly into their fields. They may have wandered a little along the path, finding something a bit closer to their heart, but they still moved along and achieved their goals. The subject of this episode is a little different. Dr. Deborah Fox has always had a passion for midwifery, but it wasn't until after an incredibly successful career as a concert violinist and symphony player that she felt she needed a new challenge, returned to study, achieving her PhD earlier this year. Anyway, let's hear Dr. Fox tell her story in her own words. What got you interested? So you're doing a PhD in, what's the actual title of your PhD?
I finished my PhD just before Christmas.
Oh, even better.
Yes. And the title is The Experiences of Women Midwives and Obstetricians in the Intrapartum Transfer of Women from the Planned Birth to Hospital.
Okay, so what is it? What were you actually looking at?
I was looking at the processes and interactions that occur when a woman is transferred during labour or soon after the birth of her baby from a planned home birth into hospital. And it been for a complication, but more often it was for a woman's request or delayed progress in her labour. So a lot of the policies and protocols state that women who are taking too long to progress in their labour need to be transferred to hospital for further investigation. So that's the most common reason.
Now, it was a big study. I saw mention, I had a look at the description, that it was over a million women's experiences you were looking at?
The Birthplace in Australia project is a large quantitative project looking at about a million women, and the results should be coming out soon. My PhD was one of two attached to the project. So my PhD was a qualitative project, and I interviewed 36 women obstetricians and midwives about their views and experiences.
You haven't always been in medicine, have you?
No. In fact, I came to midwifery in the middle of my life, but having wanted always to be a midwife. I remember when I was 9 or 10, thinking that when I grew up I would be either a midwife or an obstetrician. I didn't really know then what the differences were. And then I started to play the violin and ended up getting quite involved in that and swept up in the idea of a career in music, which is what I pursued. So I had a very interesting, wonderful time until my late 30s performing, and I played in the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra for 13 years and taught music at the University of Melbourne and travelled a lot and studied at the Juilliard School when I was 18. So I had some absolutely wonderful experiences. But I think that desire to work with women and their families never left me. And so,
what made you decide to make that jump? I mean, I understand the desire was there, but what was that final bit that said, you know what, bugger it, I'm going to do this?
Well, I think the big trigger was my 40th birthday. That was the moment when I decided, okay, if I'm going to do this, I've got to do it now. And I got a bit bored being a musician, actually. I found it lacked intellectual stimulation for me. My position as a violinist in a big symphony orchestra was starting to become a bit repetitive. We were playing the same repertoire that I'd been playing for more than 20 years, and it had been great, but I just felt this isn't stimulating me anymore. And although I was loving teaching, I found teaching more stimulating. I just felt that I wanted to move into this area that had always been in my heart and mind, but I'd never pursued it. So I went to university.
So what did
went back to university as an undergrad, and the first couple of years were challenging but wonderful. So I found that, of course, there was a lot of new language and new concepts to learn from the scientific perspective that I had been exploring in music, but also the artistic side of being a midwife. I felt very privileged, and still do feel very privileged to have had that artistic background. I think it's brought a lot to my practice and understanding as a midwife.
So what was it like as a I don't know if this is the correct term, mature age student?
Yes,
coming
that is
through
the correct term, and I was most definitely that. There were six of us in the class who were 30 or 40, and we got up to all kinds of hijinks, had lots of liquid lunches, and we're still best of friends. We still catch up whenever we can and have dinner or lunch, and a couple of them work with me at the Women's Hospital. So I think their support was invaluable, and we'd all come to midwifery from a variety of backgrounds, and that's what made it so interesting, and still that's the case. A lot of mature age students coming into midwifery coming from a wide variety of backgrounds, and I think that's a wonderful thing for the profession.
Is it something that you think has been lacking in the past, or is this something new?
Mature age students in midwifery, do you mean?
Yeah.
No, it's always been the case. So I would say, well, in the institution where I teach, about half the new students are school leavers and about half are mature age students. And I think a lot of older women come to midwifery through their own experience of having children or their own experience of supporting others having and it becomes a burning desire to work in that field. And I think, you know, it's a great thing for midwifery to have these more mature students entering the profession. The younger students are wonderful as well, and they bring different things, but I think it makes it a very rich community to have so many midwives who've had different backgrounds.
A bit of life experience along with the technical skill.
Yes, yes. I mean, midwifery is a science and an art, and so I think the richness and the diversity of the profession is a wonderful thing.
Now, you've spent 5 years in Singapore teaching midwifery, haven't you?
I did. I was working at the National University Hospital in Singapore, which was an absolutely wonderful experience. And I was extremely fortunate to work with a very special group of women who had made the decision to plan for a natural birth. Many of them wanted to labour and or give birth in water. And I was working with the obstetrician Chon Yap Seng in Singapore, who was the water birth pioneer there. And he was looking for a midwife to work with these women and families during their pregnancy to help educate them and facilitate their knowledge and preparation, and also to support them during their labour and birth, and also to train up the staff in the birth suite in skills around caring for women wanting a normal birth or water birth. So that became my role, and it was absolutely wonderful. And I was in Singapore with my husband and my son, who was 8 at the time when we were there, and we did lots of travelling and had an absolute ball. My husband was teaching at the Australian International School. And the demand increased so rapidly for our natural birth program, as it was called, that we decided to set up a team of midwives who would work alongside me to be able to meet the needs of greater numbers of women. So we set up a program called HemaCare, Enhanced Midwifery Maternity Care, and which is still going in a slightly different form, but it's now a small team of midwives who are always available for women coming in wanting a natural birth or a water birth. So it's something I'm very proud of having established in Singapore. It was their first program of access to one-to-one midwifery care in Singapore.
Did you find much of a culture clash when you were working in Singapore?
Yes, it was a big learning curve. So the wonderful thing about Singapore is that it's culturally very diverse. So Singaporeans are extremely good at adapting to different cultures. So Singapore's made up primarily of Chinese, Malaysians and Indians. Lots of languages going on around you all the time, different languages. And I was also lucky in that English is the official language. And there are also a lot of expats from all over the world, primarily in business and banking and shipping and teaching. So I think in my time there, I looked after women from almost every country, which was absolutely fantastic. But certainly the maternity care culture is very different. So all maternity care is obstetric-led. So all women have an obstetrician as their primary carer. Whereas in Australia, for example, women who are having healthy pregnancies and whose babies are healthy would be cared for primarily by a midwife, because midwives have the expertise in healthy normal pregnancy and promoting normal birth. Obstetricians have expertise in complications and surgery. And so in Australia, where we aim to work collaboratively with obstetricians and midwives are trained to refer women who require obstetric care onto obstetricians, it was different in Singapore in that obstetricians led all the cares. So when I set up the Emma Care program, it was the first time that midwives had a stronger role in working with the women, and I think that was an important step for the profession in Singapore as well.
Did you get much pushback from the obstetricians?
No. Well, I think I was very lucky that I worked with Chong Yap Sing from the outset, and he, I would have to say he's the finest obstetrician I've ever had the pleasure to work with. Very woman-centred, very pro-breastfeeding, and very supportive of women's choices and options around birth, but also very quick to step in when intervention's needed. So I think having his support from day one, he was actually on my interview panel, and having his support from the beginning was wonderful. And I also then grew to have wonderful relationships with many of the other obstetricians there. So it was a fantastic experience in working with obstetricians, which I've carried with me since.
So going back to the original thing where you were trying to decide to be a midwife or an obstetrician, what was it about midwifery that drew you away from being an obstetrician?
I think the scope of practice of midwifery was what really appealed to me. So midwifery is about women, it's about supporting families, it's about walking and working with women through pregnancy, labour, birth and early parenting and infant feeding. And so it was that whole scope that interested me, rather than just the medical aspects of childbearing. And mm-hmm. there's a very strong social perspective in midwifery that interests me greatly as well. So supporting women through all the aspects of their transition to parenthood. So there are not just physical aspects, but emotional, psychological, spiritual, sexual, economic, lots.
A much more holistic approach.
Yes, you could call it holistic, yeah.
All right, so you've completed your PhD.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Where do you want to go from here? What's the next step?
Well, it's been a very exciting ride the last couple of months since Christmas, because mm-hmm. all kinds of doors have opened up for me, which is really exciting. So I'm now teaching in the Faculty of Health, teaching to refresh subjects at University of Technology Sydney, where I did my PhD, and also continuing my work with undergraduate nurses, working with evidence for nursing. So I teach evidence-based practice in the context of nursing. Mm-hmm. And I'm also doing some research for the Ministry of Health in New South Wales, looking at, there are two bits of research I'm doing at the moment. One is looking at the promotion of breastfeeding for women during pregnancy, with the end goal of helping to reduce childhood obesity. And that project has led also to some other research around managing childhood overweight and obesity. So I'm interviewing health practitioners and families about their experience of their child's weight management. And that's very interesting, working with public health scientists and dietitians and paediatricians and nurses and physiotherapists. And it's been a wonderful experience working with such a multidisciplinary team.
So you're looking at more getting into, say, policy and that sort of thing as well?
Perhaps. I really enjoy the qualitative investigation side of things, and mm-hmm. it will be very interesting to follow the trajectory of how this research turns into policy. It's a very exciting process for me, so it will be interesting to see how that plays out across the rest of the year. But I think my passion is teaching. I love the research, but I've always had a passion for teaching, and I started teaching when I was a teenager. I started teaching music, and I still feel that that's what really lights my fire. I love seeing students. I love seeing light bulbs go on. I love the relationships I have with students. I still see students I taught 5 years ago, and it gives me such a thrill to see them now as wonderful midwives in the profession. And so that's very exciting for me. So I can't wait to get started this year.
I think it's important to acknowledge the idea that there really isn't any age at which you should say, I'm too old for that. I'm too old to make changes and jump tracks. If you've discovered a passion and you want to follow through with it, do it. How else are you going to discover new things and do wonderful things? Well, that's episode 8 done. The next episode will feature Forbes Top 30 Under 30 nominee, Natalie Matosin, who will be joining us from Germany. Now, don't forget, we do have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/angrybeanie. Any contribution will be welcome. And hopefully we should be getting more of these episodes out relatively sooner than this one. Talk to you next time.